Hey, Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Do you feel like it's Christmas yet? Because there's snow. We feel like it's a white Christmas. And, you know, because we know that first Christmas, it was really white in Bethlehem. But yeah, it's starting to feel like Christmas. Mostly, I work a tree farm, so I've been so busy, like, cutting trees. You're, like, saying Merry Christmas, but you're just thinking, another tree to cut, another tree to cut. And then this weather's great to work and cut trees in. I'm glad I have the sun that I make do most of the work. remember, child labor laws don't apply to family businesses. Anyway, I love Christmas. I really do. I love everything about Christmas except pumpkin spice. Anyone not like pumpkin spice will admit it. Just a few of us. That's good. Really? You're a female and don't like pumpkin spice? Usually it's, you know, all the ladies like it. The men don't like to admit they like it, maybe. I don't know. But I love everything. You know, I love the eggnog. I love lights. I love trees. I love getting together. And if we're honest, I like the presents. You know, we say it's about his presence. But, you know, if you know, on Christmas morning you get nothing and everyone gets something, you're kind of sore and upset about it. And you act like you're not, but you are. you know, it's just fun. And I like giving gifts to my kids, and they like getting them for sure. But it's really easy with Christmas to just sort of fall into a rut with the holidays, isn't it? And you know, you're shopping, doing things, doing all the kind of the cultural things that we do for Christmas, and then suddenly you wake up and it's Christmas morning. and you know, the funny thing is, when you're preparing to preach for Christmas, you know, most of you probably, if you've been to church very long, you feel like you've heard the Christmas story. And, you know, maybe your first year, it was like fresh and new. You're like, oh, the Christmas story, that is so cool. I didn't really know the whole thing. And then year two, you're like, yeah, I remember that. That was great when I learned last year. And then like 15 or 20 years in, you're just like, oh, I wonder what he's going to preach on. Is it going to be something out of Matthew and Luke and the Christmas story maybe? And it's one of those things, it can start to feel like, you know, maybe you feel like you've heard it all before. I think sometimes I feel like I've preached it all before. But we're going to take a chance. We're gonna look at some of the characters involved in the very first Christmas, and hopefully it'll refresh us a little bit. And today we're going to talk about a guy. And now most of us have doubts and struggles, right? Anyone else got their, you know, life's all figured out, everything's perfect for you, you never struggle, you never doubt with things, that's great for you. But the rest of us, you know, that way, and I think for a lot of us too, I think the older I get, the more I find out that life didn't turn out like I planned. Yeah. Like, you have all these plans. No offense, high schoolers. You're like, this is what I'm going to do, and that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, and it's great if your life worked out that way, but for most of us, it doesn't really work out that way. Now, it's good, but it doesn't really work out sometimes the way we maybe pictured it would. And we're going to talk today about a guy who maybe doubted even when he was hearing the greatest news ever. So if you want to open up a Bible, you can open one up to chapter 1 of the book of Luke. It's not my fault. That's where the story is. I do like the book of Luke a little bit. You would think I would have named my kid Luke or something, but, you know, middle name Cool Hand, I don't know. Anyway, in Luke chapter 1, it'll be up here on the screens too, or you can follow along in YouVersion. It says, when Herod was king of Judea, there was a Jewish priest named Zechariah. He was a member of the priestly order of Abijah, and his wife Elizabeth was also from the priestly line of Aaron. Zechariah and Elizabeth were righteous in God's eyes, careful to obey all the Lord's commandments and regulations. They had no children because Elizabeth was unable to conceive, and they were both very old. Now, when we think of Herod, I don't know what you think of immediately. Maybe if you've heard the Christmas story, you've heard of Herod. He was king, but it was under the Roman emperor. So they'd like kind of let people be king. As long as Rome's pretty happy, as long as they get their tax money and there's not a lot of people like Roman soldiers being killed. They don't care so much about the other people, but the Roman soldiers, as long as they're fine and they're getting their tax money. And so Herod was king under a Roman emperor. It's really a fascinating story. You can read about it. And now Herod's father, for those of you who like biblical kind of interesting things, he was an Edomite, a descendant of Esau, whose ancestors were converted to Judaism, so he was raised a Jew, but he was sort of suspect with some of the Jewish people, because they're like, I don't know if you're really one of us, And really, and when you think about Herod, maybe if you, I don't know what you think about it, but colossal builder. He really built a lot of cool stuff. And if you were to go to Israel today and look at some of the ruins and things, it was stuff that he commissioned and had built. And so he built a lot of stuff. He even built, I mean, it's brilliant. You read about some of the stuff. He built a harbor, you know, with like quick drying cement and all kind of, you know, like the kind of the stuff they managed to do was pretty amazing. Because I think a lot of times we think of people in the olden days as like not being very smart, if we're honest, like because they didn't have computers. I think they were smarter because they didn't have, they just using that abacus or whatever, and they were gonna, you know, they were, but they did some kind of amazing things. So Herod had that side. Herod also had this other side where he was really, like, he murdered a lot of people. You know, people would die, and he stopped murdering people outright all the time. They'd come over to, he had this, like, cool freshwater pool near the ocean and everything. It's really cool. You can go see the ruins of it today. But a lot of people had accidents, and, you know, when they went over to his house. So, you know, if he invited you over for a swim, there was a chance you were going under and die. And so he was this guy. He killed a lot of people. He killed a wife. He killed two sons. He sort of had this idea that everybody was out to get him. And so he was a little bit crazy. In fact, I mean, when he knew he was going to die, he ordered that a bunch of prominent citizens would be collected and then killed when he died, because he knew no one was going to mourn him, but he wanted there to be lots of weeping and mourning when he died. So this is like not a good guy, right? You're like thinking, this is not, I mean, I think I want to move away from him. I don't want to hang out with him. And so this is Herod. When we say Herod, now actually it's interesting, Emperor Augustus, he said it would be better to be Herod's sow, his pig, than his son, for his pig would have a better chance of surviving in a Jewish community. Because they don't eat bacon, you know, it's pre-Baconite faith. I know it gets further confusing if you read the Bible, because there's all kinds of different Herods, because he was sort of the top of that lineage. And so there's Herod the Great, there's, you know, Archelaus, who's a Herod, there's Herod the Great of Judea, there's Herod Antipas, anyway, Herod Philip, all kinds of Herods. So we're talking about the big guy, the lead dude, a little bit crazy. And there's this guy named Zechariah who was righteous and had no kids. And really, he lived with that daily disappointment. Now, it's a big deal now for a lot of us. If you want children and don't have children, it's hard. And a lot of people live with that reality. And I know I've talked to friends who, it's like, you know, when you get married, I mean, the first thing people start asking is what? When are you going to have kids? Like there's no other reason to be married than to immediately start procreating. And it's, you know, I remember when we got married, I thought kind of young, and, you know, it was like every, you know, time we would come home, because we lived everywhere, I was like, so, you know, they're kind of waiting for, you know, checking Denise out to see if she was like starting to stick out or anything, and you know, it can be painful. I had a friend, you know, friends who shared, you know, they couldn't get pregnant, and everyone keeps asking them, and it's kind of painful, but in those days, it was a big deal, but it was also, like, it was your social security. You know, they didn't have social security from the government. They didn't have health care. And so what you needed as you aged was children to take care of you. You know, and so, you know, here's this old priest. His wife's also from a priestly family. They don't have kids. They're getting on in the later years. But they didn't really, retirement's sort of a modern invention. We didn't have that from, you just work till you die. And so that's where they were there. And it says, you know, one day Zechariah was serving God in the temple, for his order was on duty that week. As was custom of the priest, he was chosen by lot to enter the sanctuary of the Lord and burn incense. While the incense was being burned, a great crowd stood outside praying. And you can kind of picture that. You know, they had, this is sort of like the reserves. You know, they didn't have to be there all the time working. He was like a part-time priest, and they'd have to go in, you know, one weekend a month, 2 weeks a year, or whatever. You know, no, they had like 2 weeks a year. They had to come in, and they had to do this job. And there were about like 18,000 priests. It's not like, you know, he was some prominent person. There were like a lot of priests, because, you know, it was hereditary, and, you know, you start having kids and generations, lots of them. And so he's on duty, and it says he enters the sanctuary of the Lord to burn incense. Now, most of us don't think much about a temple, right? Anyone think of, yeah? don't know. I've actually thought, like, it's funny because for years we've been in like this downtown basement space. And so now we're like in a more formal space. Does anyone feel a little out of place still yet? If we're honest, like some of you are like, no, I feel like all our volunteers are like, yeah, it's kind of weird. Like I walk in and there's light, there's like windows. And we hadn't had windows in years. We could do Christmas Candlelight Eve anytime during the day because, you know, now we have to actually do candlelight in the evening, which will be in the announcements later, I'm sure. But, it was kind of, this is kind of a more formal setting here, and we don't maybe think about that, but they had, like, there was like a formal temple for God, and that's where you had to go to worship him, and his presence was, you know, if you ever heard of, like, the Ten Commandments and the Ark, I'm not just talking Indiana Jones and the Ark, but, like, the Ark of the Covenant, and, you know, it's interesting, it's, if you're from America, you think Indiana Jones has it in some government warehouse. If you're from Africa, a lot of my Ethiopian friends, they believe it's actually in Ethiopia. It's kind of fascinating. And they have some real archaeological evidence to show that it might be. We don't know. We don't know what happened to the ark, but it was in this temple. It was kind of behind this thick curtain. And they would go in and they'd burn incense, not in there, but kind of just outside of there. And incense was sort of symbolic of our prayers to God. They would because you burn incense. I don't know if you guys burn much incense. I'm not a big incense guy. The most I've had is like that pine tree thing hanging from the rear view mirror or something. But don't burn those though. They don't smell good. We thought it would. It doesn't. And so it was that kind of thing where they'd go in, they'd burn incense, and it was there. And it was sort of a rare honor because, again, there's 18,000 priests. You're only coming in 2 weeks a year. You might go your whole life and never get to be the guy that goes in. And so they would go in, sprinkle a little incense, say a prayer, walk out, give a blessing, and they're done. So this is like the end of things. People are waiting. It says, he enters into the sanctuary to burn incense. It says, while he was in the sanctuary, an angel of the Lord appeared to him standing on the right of the incense altar. Zechariah was shaken and overwhelmed with fear when he saw him, but the angel said, don't be afraid, Zechariah. Shaken and overwhelmed by fear. I think, those of us who grew up in the touched by an angel era, anyone? like you think, like, angels are just going to reveal themselves, and you're like, oh, yeah, it's great. But every time in the Bible somebody sees an angel, they're freaking out. Like, they have to go, like, don't worry, don't be afraid. I don't know exactly what they look like. The Bible kind of explains it. But I'm thinking whatever this combination of shiny lightness stuff, they're scary. And so this angel shows up out of nowhere, and it's kind of like when someone scares you. I told the story one time. I don't like to be scared. I remember one time I was walking in this back hallway, and somebody, like my friend Timmy, he jumps out, and he goes, God, and I like kicked him, and it was bad because he was a youth in my youth group, and I just kicked him, but he scared me. And he's like laying there on the floor screaming, I got you, I got you. I'm like, you did, don't tell your mom. But it's like that kind of scary. This is not like anyone have those willow figurines? Like the angels, they like carve, like, some of you know what I mean. Some of you don't know what I mean. That's good. But they're like these, it's kind of like, oh, it's so pretty. That's what we picture. But whatever angels look like, they're sort of terrifying. And you're kind of wondering why they're showing up. I mean, you're in this dark room by yourself and boom, angel shows up. I don't know if he kicked him. I don't know what... Maybe he did, yelled at him. But suddenly, there's this guy in the room with him, and he's a little freaked out. It says, God has heard your prayer. Your wife Elizabeth will give you a son, and you are to name him John. You will have great joy and gladness, and many will rejoice at his birth, for he will be great in the eyes of the Lord. He must never touch wine or other alcoholic drinks. He will be filled with the Holy Spirit even before his birth, and he will turn many Israelites to the Lord their God. He will be a man with the spirit and power of Elijah. He will prepare the people for the coming of the Lord. He will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children, and will cause those who are rebellious to accept the wisdom of the godly. So if heard your prayer, you're going to have a son. His name is John. John means, God has shown favor. He's to be set apart. He's to be different. He's not even allowed to drink. And, he's going to turn many Israelites to the Lord. Now, that's all good, but it's also this fulfillment of this promise. Now, it's, I guess it was a couple summers ago. It's time starts to fly. We did a series on the minor prophets. I know Justin really liked that series. No one else remembers it. Great. Glad it was so impactful. But we did the minor prophets. And the minor prophets, they call them miners because they dug underground and dug big pit. No, though. No, they weren't miners. They weren't Minecraft prophets. They were... They were the shorter prophets, the shorter prophetic books. And so there are these little books that sometimes, I'll be honest, if you're reading the book, you're not like, oh man, I love Nahum. Like Nahum's my favorite. Anyone, Nahum, their favorite book? Anyone not even sure Nahum is a book? And so there's these little books in there. But they're again, the story of the Bible is the story of Jesus. And, it's hard sometimes. I think when you first read the Bible, maybe you get it. Maybe I read it like little bits and pieces. But then when I had my big faith commitment, I'm a scientific guy. I have a degree in chemistry. And so I originally was going to be a chemist. I'm a logical person. I thought, okay, if this is God's book, I need to read it. So I started in the beginning, and I read from Genesis through Revelation. It got real hard in like Leviticus, some of you know what I mean? There's all these laws and things, and you're reading it. But when you read it, you really see that it's this story of Jesus. The whole thing is continually, we don't always understand. We took communion today, and you see the plagues in Egypt, and the Israelites come out and they celebrate a thing called Passover. Jesus shows up and we find out, oh, that whole thing was all about him the old time. I get it now. And so there's a lot of those things and those stories in there, and it all points to Jesus. And sometimes we forget that at this time, the Roman government had taken over. The Jewish people were not in slavery in the same sense, but they were taken over by this foreign occupying power, and they were looking forward to redemption. And there was two passages. Oh, that's where I got on the minor prophets. There's two passages out of the minor prophets from a book named, now I got to make my joke, right? Malachi, the Italian prophet. But anyway, it's Malachi. In Malachi chapter 3, it says, look, I am sending my messenger and he will prepare the way before me. The Lord you are seeking will suddenly come to his temple. The messenger of the covenant whom you look for eagerly is surely coming. Says the Lord of heaven's armies. Malachi 4:5. Look, I am sending you the prophet Elijah before the great and dreadful day of the Lord arrives. His preaching will turn the hearts of fathers to their children and the hearts of the children to their fathers. Otherwise, I will come and strike the land with a curse. And so there's this expectation of somebody coming, and it's all in this expectation of Christ. And so here, Zechariah goes from this disappointment to being told, hey, you're a part of this big plan. You have been waiting. It's been 400 years since Malachi was written. So 400 years, this anticipation, this excitement, and you get to be a part of that plan. And you can imagine he's excited. And so Zechariah, in his excitement, says to the angel, how can I be sure this will happen? I'm an old man now, and my wife is also well along in years. So, he didn't sound too excited, does he? Sounds like maybe he's like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't know if you know it, but usually when you like reach 90, you don't have a lot of kids. we don't know exactly how you know, but he was old enough that he was like, hey, that train has passed. And you could tell his wife wasn't there because he mentioned she also was old and that train had passed. And, for those of you who are younger, don't ever mention how old your wife is and what she can't do. That could lead you to divorce court, or worse. Maybe you should have just been quiet. We all have doubts. We all have struggles with faith. And, it's not that, he just had some doubts and some struggles, but he's standing in the presence of an angel who's declaring this will be, and he's like, that should be proof enough, right? Like, this is not your normal, ordinary, sprinkle a little, incense on a burning bowl, and have smoke. This is like this incredible experience. And so the angel replies, I am Gabriel. I stand in the very presence of God. It was he who sent me to bring you this good news. But now, since you didn't believe what I said, you will be silent and unable to speak until the child is born. For my words will certainly be fulfilled at the proper time. He's like, so, hey, you want a sign? Here's one. Be quiet. And his wife loved it because for 9 months, you know, she won every argument. He couldn't. You know, it says, meanwhile, the people were waiting for Zechariah to come out of the sanctuary, wondering why he was taking so long. Remember, he's just supposed to go in, sprinkle a little incense on, and come out. You know, like, they're out there, like, they're like, dude, I got lunch plans. Like, there's a festival down in, you know, I was going to go to the street thing. I meet somebody. You know, it's a, you know, this is their 1 week in the big city. You know, he was out from the country. You know, and so they're just sitting there, like, they're like, dude, what is taking you? Did the guy die? Like, does he not know how to sprinkle incense? I mean, that was in Priestly 101. And, you know, they're kind of waiting for him to come out and sort of, you know, pronounce the blessing at the end. And if you're from a more liturgical church, you know, after kind of church is done, you know, the pastor comes up and kind of does this thing. I speak sometimes at more liturgical churches, and I'm like, you look at the agenda, and you're like, oh, I have to give a blessing. I'm like, I'm not sure what to say. And don't do that when you're there, because, like, you feel like you should raise your hand, but you do that, and they're just like, they're looking, oh, you're like, oh, no, I'm supposed to do this or some, not do this, not that. Anyway, live long and prosper. And that's what everybody was waiting for. And so, he does come out. And so you kind of picture, what does he do? Because they're waiting for this blessing. Is it charades? You know, two words, sounds like. You know, is he acting it out? You know, like but he has this he can't say anything. And so it says, when Zechariah's week of service in the temple was over, he returned home. Soon afterward, his wife Elizabeth became pregnant and went into seclusion for 5 months. How kind the Lord is, she exclaimed. He has taken away my disgrace of having no children and made my husband not be able to speak. No, I added that. I added that. I'm sorry. That's not in there. That's why you need to check it up and read, make sure Jeff's saying that, you know. And really, you know, there's multiple times in the Bible where we have, if you heard the story, Abraham and Sarah, who are the parents of the Jewish nation. You know, they didn't have kids for a long time, but then God did something miraculous. They do, and Jacob and Rachel, and it's not an uncommon theme, but it's this thing that sometimes when you're at your end naturally, God does something supernaturally, and God often brings His greatest blessing. You know, when we've given up hope. I mean, Zechariah really, he was probably really disappointed in not having kids. He resigned himself to the fact that, hey, I'm going to die without them. And he was righteous. He didn't just divorce his wife and go get, you know, marry someone else, but he stuck with her. And he was disappointed, you know, in who was king. The Israelite people didn't like having the Roman government over them. It would be like in America. I mean, we are like America, right? I mean, we're America. You know, with bass boats and, you know, shotguns. We are Southern Delaware here, you know. A little bit of redneck runs through us. We are proud of, you know, we like being in America, right? You know, they would have been that kind of pride in their nation. Imagine a foreign, imagine Canada comes down and takes over. They're not really very fearsome, are they, the Canadians? I was trying to not always go to ISIS, but picture that, you know. Picture, ISIS comes over, takes over America. You'd be very unhappy, right? And so he's in that disappointment, and, you know, he's disappointed in who's the king. And, you know, it's interesting, thinking about that phrase, you know, I've heard your prayer. I always assumed it was like a prayer for kids. Anyone kind of thought that if they've read the story? But you can be honest. I did too. So the more I think about it, though, the more I think that's probably not the case. If he'd prayed for kids and then the angel said, oh, you're going to have kids, he'd be like, what? Yay. You know, but I think his prayer was probably for, you know, Israel. You know, that, hey, you know, we wish we weren't this nation under siege. And ultimately, God answers both prayers. Because he says, he's announced, hey, this freedom's coming, this long-awaited Messiah is coming, and hey, your son is going to play a part, because your son is going to announce that my son has come. And in life, you know, we're often disappointed. I know that sounds like very bad. Like, I mean, people, like, we want like our best life all the time, and we want everything good, and we want the Pinterest life, right? Like, when I make stuff that I see on Pinterest, it does not look like Pinterest. And we've had some cool like nursery decorating. If you've seen like our Instagram, I posted some of the pictures and stuff that people have done. People do some cool decorating here, but if I had to decorate, it would not look so cool. Like, there's a reason I'm not in charge of decorating the nursery. But we kind of have lives sometimes. And we cultivate lives. I know people who, their online life, man, if their real life was like that, it would be amazing. Because, you know, the truth is, there's high points in life, but there's also some low points. There's some, those things that really don't work out. And often, you know, we're disappointed. You know, I love, you know, all the job things are like, find something you love to do and you'll never work a day in your life and all this. That's great, because 10 people in the world, I think, have that job. The rest of us have jobs where we don't like parts of it, right? Like, I don't like this part of my job. I don't care, do it. You know, like, we're working on the tree farm. I'm sure, you know, sometimes our guys are like, oh, I don't want to go cut that tree. I'm like, well, that's great, but you're paid to, so go do it. and, you know, a lot of times we're not happy in our jobs. If we're truthful, a lot of times we just do our job because we need to pay the bills. And, you know, I think a lot of us, there's family situations. I could go in all kinds of directions like that. There's probably situations right now at home that are not great. There's probably, you know, situations with work friends that are not great. You know, and the truth is, life sometimes doesn't turn out the way we're thinking. But here's the thing, God still remembers. God will speak, God will still act. Romans 8:28 says, and we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them. It doesn't promise that God will make everything bright and shiny and perfect, but God will work something out. And so God was working something out in Zechariah's life. He was working things out. And this season is really the season we celebrate that there's promise fulfilled. There's hope. They'd waited hundreds of years for the coming Messiah, and now it's time. There's 400 years between Malachi and Luke, and now the time has come. God shows up at just the right time. You know, and often it's funny with the gospel, and we'll see when we read the gospel passages, that the people who shouldn't get it. You know, the people who are the outcasts, the people who are, you know, lepers, the people, you know, who are the sinners. And I always think it's funny because, you know, it always says Jesus hung out with not just sinners, but notorious sinners. Like you're really known for being a sinner. You're not just a sinner. You know, you got the rep for it, and you got the proof. You got the little ID card. I don't know. But the people who should get it don't, but the people who are sort of not the ones you think get it are the ones that get the gospel. 1 Corinthians 1:25, we were in the men's group yesterday, and I'd encourage you to just look at that picture of my breakfast plate if you're a man. Yeah, I see people grumbling already. You know, there was comments, they're like, is there a women's group that does that? And I'm like, I hope so, I'll go to that one too. I'll just wait for the leftovers. But, I mean, it was like ridiculous. It was like pancakes, and it was like eggs and some potato thing and bacon and sausage. And if we just added Scrapple, you know, I'll bring Scrapple maybe next time. Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. but that was not the point. The point was, we were reading this passage yesterday, I think it really sticks here. It says, 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26, remember, dear brothers and sisters, that few of you are wise in the world's eyes or powerful or wealthy when God called you. Instead, God chose the things the world considers foolish in order to shame those who think they're wise. And he chose the things that are powerless to shame those who are powerful. God chose things despised by the world, things counted as nothing at all, and used them to bring to nothing what the world considers important. You know, you may not feel special. You may not feel important. Zechariah may not have felt special or important. He was just an older priest living in a small hick town, coming in for his week of service in Jerusalem, but God chose them. And God often chooses people who are unlikely candidates to do things. And you might feel insignificant, and the truth is you might be. But God will use you anyway. You know, Zechariah was no one special. He was one in 18,000. But God used him in a way that, you know, I was thinking about this too. You know, what did he ever know of his son after that? He was old. Did he see his son become an adult? Did he see his son become John the Baptist? And that's who he becomes. I don't think I mentioned that, but maybe if you know the story. And so, you know, he becomes someone big, important, and famous, but his dad may have never seen that. But God uses unlikely people and unlikely circumstances to change the world. And ultimately, God will use your situation and your story, too, as a part of his story. God brings hope where there is no hope. And so I invite you to join us this Christmas season. We're going to talk about more characters, more hope, and ultimately the whole season points to Jesus. We always say, you know, Jesus is the reason for the season. but really, I mean, and we put the Christ back in Christmas. I read articles, people are like, you know, I remember I had a relative who hated the X for Xmas. Anyone hate that? X is the Greek letter for Christ, so you know, Christos. Now you're not sure whether to hate it or not. but you know, in the midst of all this stuff, I encourage you to come. We're gonna explore the Christmas story. We're gonna continue along that journey as we see more about this story that really changes everything.